Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you. Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. And welcome again to Booger T. Washington African American Family Room Forum. We certainly are very happy that you have joined us this evening. And this includes all of you who are listening via the internet. And before we begin the show, I want to let you know that we encourage all of you who tuned in via the internet to call in and let us hear your thoughts. We have a topic tonight we'll begin the show with, but we don't have to stay on it. You may have something else you want to hear us talk about or that you may want to talk about and get our opinions on. So the number to call is 657-383-0671, and I will plan to repeat that in a few minutes. But right now, we're going to ask our co-host, Ms. Bianchi, for a radio check. Ms. Bianchi, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I am, Marshall. You sound very good.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, and welcome to the show as our co-host another Saturday evening as we move right along into the latter part of 2021. What a year it has been. Anyway, I also want to welcome Brother Warren and say John Kenan Bay was on for just a moment, but he had to drop off. I hope he does come back. But here's the topic we're going to begin with tonight. What is the benefit? What is the benefit? And that's the key word, benefit. What is the benefit to the African-American community of having the statues of Confederate generals removed from the public park that's called Emancipation Park in Charlottesville, Virginia? Now, I just want to read a brief quote from someone who says, "I'm ecstatic that we're here now. It's sad that it has taken so much to get us to this point, but is an incredible day." And this was spoken by a black activist named Don Gatherers, who has long advocated for the statue's removal. So two statues are being removed or have been removed today, as of today, I believe. It happened today, but it may have been yesterday, but they're gone now from the park. Robert E. Lee, the head of the Army of Northern Virginia and later the commander-in-chief of all the Confederate forces, and then his top lieutenant, General Thomas Stonewall Jackson, and these statues have now been removed. And the article I'm reading says that couples, families with small children and activists donned Saturday. So it was today. The crowd intermittently chanted and cheered as progress was made fairly quickly. Hymns at one point wafted down the street as musicians performed them in front from the front steps of a church. And then another person said, "Good atmosphere, good vibes, and good energy." Now, I want to give you the opposing side of that. One of the lawyers, doesn't say what his race was, he made the comment. He's a local attorney by the name of Charles Buddy Weber. And he said in a phone interview that he wondered if history will view the push to remove monuments as a sincere and effective attempt at racial reconciliation. And then he followed that up by saying, "My personal view is that this act is not going to improve the life of anybody in the city of Charlottesville." So you can see that's a counterpoint to the other things that I read. So now we're going to leave it open to our panel to discuss. And anyone that would like to join in this discussion, we're going to stop at 9 o'clock tonight. So we have only about 50 minutes to do this. But right now we only have a co-host, Ms. Bianchi, myself and Brother Warren. Hopefully, say, John Cannon Bay will come back on. He was here. And others will join us. But all of you who are listening via the internet, we encourage you to dial in. The number is 657-383-0671. I'd like to say this, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Bianchi for his commentary. But hopefully these shows like this, the one tonight and others going back 4 years, we'll have these archived into perpetuity in one form or another where you can access these, because these are some very educational conversations that we've been having for the last 4 years. And down the road, the conversation we have tonight and the opinions that are going to be voiced on the panel tonight, by the panel tonight, may benefit your children and your grandchildren. Some things are going to come out that they probably would never hear in school. They probably would never hear in the public media. Because we're going to talk about who these two people were that these statues represent and what was their role in relationship to the African-American people and what was their role in relationship to the history of the United States of America. And these young people coming up need to know who these significant figures were, whether you agree with the positions they took on different issues. But because they are historically significant figures, young people need to know about them. So some things are going to probably be said that the young people may be able to be enlightened by tonight or in the future when they listen. So we'll begin with our co-host, Ms. Bianchi. Ms. Bianchi, what do you think?
Well, to your questions, I don't think it's going to bring any thing whatsoever myself. Now, I don't live in Charlottesville. But what the sad side of people of Charlottesville is the people of Charlottesville. But I appreciate the service, even though I wasn't living at that time, that Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson done for the United States, especially in their Mexican-American War, which when Texas seceded, Mexican government wanted to wage war against them. And one thing led to another, and we ended up having that particular war. So if people, I don't think they know the entire history of what those soldiers fought in. I look at them as American soldiers that just so happened. And it's a lot of contention that goes along with what they do. But I celebrate them for being soldiers of the United States and fighting in the United States wars.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Washington. Thank you, Ms. Bianchi. So, Brother Warren, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm enjoying the hot weather out here in Sacramento, California, and it's hot as hell out here.
All right.
And so I've been doing I'll be doing a California tour of family and relatives, so on and so forth. I want to first say something positive before I get negative, and I want to congratulate the young lady from the New Orleans area. Her name is Zelia Avant-Garde. She's the first black person to win the National Spelling Bee. And she's also a three-time Guinness Book of Record. She bounces multiple basketballs at like one time there.
Mm.
So I want to say congratulations to her. She lives in the New Orleans area there. On your topic, I want to say that, Mr. Bianchi, your ancestors are rolling in their grave at how you have become. You become a disgrace to them. And I want to say,
Brother Warren, I got to stop you right now. You know, one of the guiding principles of this show is that we don't address each other personally in a negative way, even though we don't agree with their position. So I would like to say, if you could, I know your emotions may be kind of high on a lot of topics to talk about, but one of the things we had all agreed on, that was one of the bylaws of the show, you might say, is that we will not attack other panelists or other guests personally about whatever they might have to say. That way people can feel free to express their opinions and we can have a free and open dialogue. So, but please go ahead.
All right. I respect your wishes and the bylaws of the show, Mr. Washington. For the answer to the initial question, it's not going to benefit black people by taking it down, and it didn't benefit black people when it was put up. I did do a show yesterday, Mr. Washington. I want to share this with you. And the show is going to be a series of shows I entitled Warning. So the show is called First Warning. Beware of black people who identify with the conservative movement. That was the title of the show. And then I had 7 talking points that conservatives and black conservatives speak on that I address. And what was interesting about that show, one of my regular listeners he's a black person. He considers himself a constitutionalist, a independent, how does he put that? An independent of declaration constitutionalist, conservative. He's a 3-time war veteran. He fought in 3 tours of different military campaigns, and he's a retired police officer. Now, although I disagree with his overall ideological view, to me, he's earned the right from his service to have the position he has. Now, I was so impressed with his ability to defend his position, referencing history and books, and he was so appreciative of my ability of commanding history. We went back and forth. And I even offered him, when the show was going off, I gave him my email address to email me. And I said, maybe we could do shows where we disagree and we just say opposite side of our viewpoints. And he said, okay, just send me. So that show was addressing the black conservative and the talking points they use. And what this guy says is he don't like talking points. And one of the talking points that black conservatives use that I mentioned in the list is Booker T. Washington. And when I begin to explain how black conservatives try to use Booker Washington as if Booker Washington would be alive today, he would be on their side. When I finished that, he even thanked me for bringing up Booker T. Washington, because he himself is also a student of his work. And I bring this up, I say all this to say, you can have opposing views, but some people go overboard, Mr. Washington. Some people become, they want to be the image of an actual racist themselves. You can't respect those kind of people. But this person who has this perspective, I respect him. I give him respect and even offer him a platform on my forum to express his views that I disagree with. And so that's what I want to say on that issue there. Some people, Mr. Washington, have no credentials, they have shady past, and they go overboard extreme. But not this guy who, in my view, has the credentials to earn the right to declare himself some sort of conservative or constitutionalist, simply because he put his own blood and life on the line believing in that, right? He actually believed in that and served as a police officer. That don't impress me per se, but the fact that he has done more than others who claim the same kind of belief. And so I want to share that with you there. So that's the type of thing we have. When people go extreme and do something and be disrespectful to black people's history, disrespectful to their ancestors, and seeing their own ancestors like white racists, that is a psychotic problem. And that person shouldn't be respected. Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Okay, well, we may end up not even going until 9 o'clock because really it's just the three of us, and we pretty much already know where each one of us stands in terms of our positions on the question. But I do want to say one thing. Right, this past week, a couple weeks ago, I guess it started, I assigned my history, American history students, to write a very brief essay, but a meaningful essay, where they took a position concerning whether they believed that what Booker T. Washington advocated in his what's called the Atlanta Compromise speech, but that's not the real title of it. It was actually a speech that he gave at the Cotton States Exposition in Atlanta in 1895 on September the 18th of 1895. And he was, as far as I can recall from looking at the records, he was the only African-American that was invited to speak to that very, very large gathering of people that came to see all of these exhibits to show what the quote-unquote New South was in the process of producing as the South was recovering from the devastation of the Civil War. And because of the work that Booker T. Washington had done at Tuskegee in just 14 years, in such a short period of time, he had received the recognition by the organizers of that exposition to the extent that they wanted him to deliver a message to the black people who were also there and the white audience. And many of you are familiar with it. I won't repeat what he said in that brief talk. So the students had to read that and look at the context in which he said at the time in which he gave that speech. It was just a few years after the end of the Civil War, not even 30 full years. Well, about 30 years, actually. It was 30 years. Not 30 years, because we're talking about, 30 years, 1895. But the point of it is, wasn't a whole lot of time had passed. So you had veterans of the Civil War, probably some few Northern veterans, but a lot of probably Confederate veterans there. And they're listening to this black man who they had grown up believing, being taught in church and in school, were less than full human beings. And now they listen to this very articulate, wise black man trying to present some type of possible solution to tone down the rancor that was present at that time, because this was right after Reconstruction. The soldiers from the North had been down there. Unfortunately, a lot of pain and anguish had accompanied their occupation of the South during those few years. And the people still were angry, and they were blaming black people for what had happened, and black people were innocent pawns. But the thing about it, the other side of the coin was W.E.B. Du Bois, who was several years younger than Booker T. Washington, who had never been a slave, who was born in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and who had been educated at Fisk University, Harvard University, and also at the University in Berlin. So his approach was a totally different kind of approach than Booker T. Washington. So the students had to read passages from his works, and they had to decide what their position was, whether they supported Booker T. Washington or Du Bois. Now, I'm the senior male descendant of Booker T. Washington, but that's not what I'm getting paid for. I'm getting paid to be an impartial evaluator of how well they present their arguments. And I was very impressed. About half of them supported Booker T. Washington, and half of them supported Du Bois for their various reasons that they gave. My point is this. It's very important, and we're all educated, not just us on the panel, but many of us that are listening via the Internet. And one of the main things that we're taught to do, especially in higher education, is to be objective and impassionate in evaluating information and look at the facts and evaluate positions based on the facts. And I'm saying all this to say that I have to tell you, I don't believe that removing the statue of Robert E. Lee, who was a very, very outstanding general, regardless of who was paying him to be a general or what cause that he was fighting for. But his generalship had been proven in a number of battles and campaigns before the Civil War, as Ms. Bianca mentioned, when he was tasked to go to Mexico and be involved leading a command down there. And Stonewall Jackson, of course, we know his courageous stand where someone said, look at him, he looks like a stone wall or something to that effect. He's standing there like a stone wall, courage under fire, in other words. So regardless of what a position that a person happens to be in, a good soldier is a good soldier. You know, we had the greatest respect when I was fighting during Desert Storm. Now, I was on a ship, so I didn't see the enemy. But we had the greatest respect for their ability to fly high in the sky and to release guided missiles to blow up our ship because we had trained them. And they were good students. You know, when these Iraqis went down to Pensacola to the training school for pilots and other places, they got the best training. I'm not saying the training that the Russian fighter pilots got wasn't as good as ours, but we gave them the best possible training we could possibly give them. And so we knew the capabilities of these folks, and they had been our allies at one time. So even though they were now our enemies, we still respected their military capabilities. So Robert E. Lee was a great military general, regardless of what cause he was trying to uphold. I don't agree with him being a slaveholder. Well, I don't agree with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson being slaveholders. I don't agree with my great-great-grandfather, Ethel Cabinus, had the same name as mine because he acknowledged my grandfather, he acknowledged my great-grandfather, that's his son, and took care of him and put him in his will. But he had slaves, too. But I don't deny the fact that he must have been an officer because they commissioned him as a lieutenant in the Confederate Army. But I respect him for being a commissioned officer in whatever army he was in. And I certainly respect him for pursuing. All right, let me finish. I'm going to be finished in a second. But we're going to probably just go short tonight, so this is going to be my last statement. I'm not going to go back and forth. Give me one more minute or less to get the rest of this out, and then you can take it for the next 10 minutes or whatever you want to, and Ms. Bianca can wrap it up, and we'll be through for tonight. Just finish. Let me just finish. All I'm saying that I believe that it's one thing to get happy about vestiges and symbols of slavery being taken down. But the greatest vestige and symbol of slavery that I see personally with my own eyes is when I go through some of our African-American neighborhoods and I see the blight and neglect that we have allowed ourselves to live in when we could do something even to get a lawn mower and cut our own grass. Some of these neighborhoods look like the grass of some of these residences, yards has to be cut in people living there. And even though there are older people living in some of these houses that look like they might be getting ready to fall down, some of these older ladies, they have sons, grandsons, nephews, grandnephews. They should care enough about where grandmama is living to get a lawnmower from somewhere every couple weeks and cut her yard. And that's just one example, and I'm going to leave with this last one. Or in a neighborhood right here in Augusta, Georgia, that I'm very familiar with. I don't live in it, but I know people that live in it. There are potholes in the street, and I have a very nice car, and I'm afraid to drive in that neighborhood because I don't want to break my axle or disalign my wheels hitting one of those potholes, because potholes are kind of deep. Now, that's not something that the neighborhood people should have to fix. The city should be doing that. But the city is not doing that. So what does that mean? Are we going to be satisfied to leave these potholes that can damage our vehicles unfixed just because the city's not doing it? No. There's no reason in the world why some of the young men, older men too, girls if they want to help, can't get a permit from the city if that's necessary. I don't even know if it'd be required to get some necessary fill-up ingredients, whatever, that the engineers say will hold 2,000 pounds every few minutes. Those holes up so people's cars won't get broke. So those are the vestiges of slavery that I think need to be removed. That kind of attitude that let the master take care of all of the streets. Let the master send somebody to cut our yards. Let the master still take care of us. You know, give us a new shack, a new house to live in. These symbols of these generals, to me, moving them is not going to change the way that we live. That's my opinion. Okay, let's go ahead with you, Brother Warren, and then we're going to close out after you with Mr. Priyanka, and that'll end the show for tonight. Go ahead.
I want to point well taken about the streets and the neighborhoods and stuff, but I want to push back on you and challenge you on something you did. You gave a rationale why Andrew Jackson and Robert E. Lee should be given admirable praise because of their military skill. Now, let me ask you this. They have been professors that have applied the same analysis to Adolf Hitler. What would happen to you, Mr. Washington, if you praised admirably Adolf Hitler's skills of organizing and leadership at that university that you work at? What do you think would happen to you?
Okay, I'm going to answer the question. Let me give you my answer. Don't interrupt me because it's not going to be a long answer. First of all, Adolf Hitler was an abject failure as a military leader, okay? All right, so I would never praise him. I'm talking about praising the military prowess, military achievements, military skills of people. I would never give that kind of praise to Adolf Hitler. All right. Now, I would praise Erwin Rommel, who was a great, great tank leader, great military leader. Okay. And there are others that showed us superior skill in their jobs as military leaders. But that analogy used in Adolf Hitler, it really doesn't fit because I would never say that he was even a mediocre military leader. He was a poor military leader.
Mr. Washington, the South lost the Civil War. Robert E. Lee was a failure, okay? And I still don't hear no professors giving admirable praise of German, Nazi German military. And try that at the university, Mr. Washington, see what happens.
Well, let me just say this about losing a war. I want to say this about losing the war. We lost in Vietnam. We lost badly. But I don't think that General Creighton Abrams, who succeeded General Westmoreland, was a poor general because the politicians tied his hands where he could not do what would have been necessary to win that war. So just because a war is lost for whatever reason, political reasons or lack of logistical support or whatever, doesn't mean that the military leader is a bad leader. So that really works either.
Well, my only point in bringing those up is we have to be consistent with our line of argument. If we could stand up and give these slaveholding, ideologically racist people who mistreated black people some sort of respect and praise because of other aspects, we should be do the same thing with the Nazi German generals. But we know that there is a line we are told not to cross, because if we cross it, there are sanctions and consequences. Others are going to make us pay if we do it. But when it comes to black people, you can praise the slaveholders and talk about the slaves being property. Not you per se, but we can praise all of these people that put our ancestors through hell and then condemn our ancestors for so. That's what some people do. I'll be quiet.
Okay, well, I just want to welcome Dr. Nobles to the show, and I'm going to go ahead and let him speak next after I announce the topic, because I don't know if he's had a chance to read the marquee. So I'm going to familiarize him with the topic, but I do want to say this very quickly. One of the greatest generals in the history courses that I teach, world history course, was Gaius Julius Caesar. And from the best of my knowledge, he also was a slave owner. And probably because I know something about the people that were put in slavery during that time, probably some of those slaves, if not most of those slaves, were black people. That doesn't take away from him being a great general. As I said, Erwin Rommel, he actually fought for the Nazi government, the Third Reich government, during that time that they were trying to take over Europe. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't a good tank commander, that he wasn't a good general because of the side he fought on. Now, I will say this in direct response to which I can stand up on the campus in any classroom or online, and I can tell the students without any retribution because of academic freedom that these men who have a record of military prowess and military achievements, regardless of whether they fought for the Third Reich or the Confederate Army or the Japanese Imperial Army or whatever army, if they distinguish themselves militarily, I can say that because that's a fact of military history.
But Mr. Washington, if a Jewish student is in your classroom and reports that whole Jewish establishment in the community in the state of Georgia will be down on you. You know that, Mr. Washington.
Well, I can tell you this. I would expect if I was to, because I do teach U.S. history and we do cover World War II, and if I put it out there that Erwin Rommel was an outstanding general, regardless of the fact, and he was not a Nazi, but regardless of the fact that he was under the command of the Nazi government, the Jewish students and anybody else can get upset about it, but that's a fact of history. Any military historian using the standards of evaluating, and we have a military professional man that's coming up next, but using the standards of evaluating military achievements or military war fighting qualifications, the military facts are there, regardless of how they feel about it. That's a fact of military history. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over now to Dr. Nobles. But before I do that, Dr. Nobles, welcome again. And here's the topic for tonight. We're going to end, by the way, at 9 o'clock.
But the topic is this. What is the benefit to the African-American community of having the statue of Confederate generals? And in this case, we're referring specifically to the two statues that were removed in Charlottesville, Virginia. One from Emancipation Park, that was General Robert E. Lee, and then from another nearby location of General Stonewall Jackson. What's the benefit of these statues and other statues throughout the South and throughout the country of Confederate being removed? What's the benefit to the African-American community? So, Dr. Nobles, thank you for being present tonight. Welcome again. And we certainly like to hear what you have to say about this.
Good afternoon to everybody on the line. Thank you, Brother Cavendish. And, you know, this is a really sensitive topic. And I would tell you that I talked to a lot of people about this. And a lot of people feel that since the South actually lost the war, that we should not be patronizing those generals in any way. Some Afro-Americans believe that those statues represent a way of carrying out hate and fear to the slaves and the descendants of those slaves. But I personally believe that you can tear down the statues all you want. And there's the history of what those generals was able to accomplish have been etched in so many books and different types of literature and just so many artifacts throughout the United States and the federal government in so many ways that the statues themselves are just one artifact that illustrate, you know, how the people in the South really feel about those generals. Now, there's a whole different conversation about their ability to actually, you know, when we go to evaluate them about on their warship as warfare fighters. That's a different conversation, whether they were slave owners or not. I mean, even when you are accessing, when you're evaluating your adversaries, and we look at, you know, other countries, we look at their executive government, we look at their executive leadership, we look at their federal agencies, we look at their leading admirals and their leading generals. We might not like them and what they stand for, but you still have to respect what they bring to the table in terms of military warfare. And we look for ways to find weaknesses in those individuals. We also identify their strengths. And so regardless of where you serve or how you serve, and for you to get to the level that these individuals, these generals got to in the South, and to that level of leadership, you know, it speaks to their ability as warfare fighters and to lead troops in combat. I don't care. You can't just eliminate that. Now, I'm not saying that these individuals did not have slaves. I'm not saying that. I'm speaking purely from a warfighting capacity. These individuals will be etched in history for years to come. I can tell you by just speaking with other senior officers in other countries, they talk about some of our most senior leaders, whether it was some of the leaders from the South or was it from the North or some of our current leaders. They have the utmost respect for them, just like we have the utmost respect for some of the most repulsive leaders in other militaries. And so it's a different conversation. And I just think we have to be willing to have those conversations differently because, I mean, it's just whether or not, you know, we're not judging them on their ability, you know, as a slave owner. We're judging them on their ability as a warfighting asset. And it's just a, you know, a different conversation. Now, if we were to, you know, judge them holistically, one would say, how can you be a general and show great compassion when you are oppressing people? And yet the actions that you were doing and taking in your personal life drove to the one of the deadliest battles we ever seen in all of warfare. That's a whole different conversation. I think you have to, you know, put it in that aspect. But when it comes to, like, you know, what they brought to the table as warfighting commanders, some of them were great. There's nothing that can be taken away from them. And some of their works and some of their philosophy is still taught today. In the highest levels of military war colleges around the world, and you still have people from different countries coming here to learn about those generals in the South. It is what it is. And we just but it doesn't mean that we can look at it and just say that they were not great at what they did. They also did some other horrific things as slave owners. We know that.
But Dr. Noble, let us not forget they used those military skills to put down black people who was fighting to be free. But many of these slave revolts that occurred in America, they outmaneuvered some of the finest white generals who went to military school. The Haitian Revolution being an example. The revolt in Jamaica being another example. So they used the Citadel military school was established to train white males to put down slave revolts. So how can we be consistent with our consciousness as black people who are descended from these people and praise white people for the military skills who were using it to torture us and put us down who were fighting for real freedom? That's the point I'm making.
Right, and I will tell you, that's a very interesting point, but you also have to look at put it in context. When you look at these things as from a researcher or from a historian, you have to put it in context. We're not saying what they were doing, what everything they did is right. We're not saying that at all. And we're not.
Well, they got one person on here saying they did was right. They got one person saying putting down slave revolts was a good thing.
I mean, I personally believe that getting rid of slavery in this country was the right thing to do. I also believe that we don't give our trophies to second place teams. I also believe in that. And so, you know, but a lot of people feel like what the generals represented, not on the field and off the field, is indicative of their culture and their customs, even though to us it's repulsive because we know that some of the same military tactics we use against our adversaries were also used on us. We know that. And that's why a lot of people feel like, you know, these generals should never, ever be mentioned because of the horrific things that we were doing in the South.
Let me break in right now because we only have 12 minutes left before I had intended to close out the show. But we do have two other guests that just joined. They may be familiar with the topic, but I do need for their benefit to, without editorializing and elaborating, I do need to at least state the topic and give each one of them a chance to give their comments. So I want to welcome the two that just joined. One of them is from the 408 area code. The last three numbers of the phone number are 968, and the other is from the 864 area code, and the last three numbers are 244. And I just want to quickly read out the topic, and that is this. What is the benefit to the African-American community? To the African-American community, what is the benefit of having the statues of Confederate generals removed from the public parks in Charlottesville, Virginia? So we're going to begin with our guest.
Hey, can I say something, Mr. Washington, real quick?
Ms. Piaggi, you're going to have the closing comment. Can you hold off then? Because I got to be finished.
Yeah, go ahead, let him in.
And I need to do that. Okay. All right.
All right, go ahead. Yes, sir.
But you'll have the closing comment. But our guest from 408, area code, welcome to the show. And would you like to comment on that question?
Yeah, thank you much. I'd like to make a comment about it, though. I don't know what benefit it serves by doing that. I'm not sure, you know, what the benefits are in that. But as you were speaking about leadership, you know, a leader, you know, leaders lead from the front lines, you know, they're out on the front lines. That's what a leader does. So he leads from the front. Now, I just want to make a little distinction. It's leaders make mistakes, you know, it's just the way it works, you know, everybody's the same. And so I just want to use a reference real quick. King David was a leader, you know, but he wasn't on the front lines one day. He wasn't out on the front lines, though. He was at home, and he got hooked up with Bathsheba, the neighbor's lady, you know, the neighbor lady. But the neighbor lady, her husband was his right hand man, and he was out there on the front line. You know, so leaders make mistakes, but you know what? It's all about the heart. You know what I mean? I think it's a heart thing, you know, and when people put their heart into something, you know, hey, we're all going to make mistakes as we're executing what we're doing, but we're going to get up and we're going to keep going. We're not going to just get distracted and be off in la-la land. No, we have a mission, you know, and today the mission is to get these men equipped to be men. You know, so that the kids can look up to their father figures and know how it's done. I think there's a lack of responsibility in a lot of people today. That's what I got to say about it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Well, I wanted to add on. This is Equanee. I'm calling from 7244, and I just want to add on, you speaking about the statues being removed from Charlottesville. I don't know what I know no black person from Charlottesville. You know, don't know what the population of black folk are there. But I will say this, that a lot of times we as black folk, we can't get caught up in the apparent wins such as those. I think if we're saying that those monuments are being destroyed now, even by, you know, whiteers and people that have a, you know, that are down with the new idea. If they are now starting to, implement, enforce a level of new thinking that their quote unquote forefathers didn't have as it relates to their relationship with black folk or any other ethnic group. I'm not mad at it, and I think sometimes these may be indicators that there is a paradigm shift in thinking. Sometimes it is kind of comical, and you know, I mind you, some of this stuff may be hoax. They may be doing things, you know, just because. But you know, I think it does stand for the erasing or the removal of a certain mind or mentality that has been lodged in the fabric of America for so long. And it does call people to question the very thing in which people were taught enormously within their history classes. So I think it's very important. I think, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to win. It doesn't mean that you're liberated. And maybe at any cost, but I definitely feel like it's serving its purpose, just as in the now, as a conversation piece. Rather than nothing being done, you understand? So it does call us to say, well, hey, what is it more that we can do? Well, let's get together to start erecting monuments that reflect the images that we want to see. You understand? If we don't want to see those, let's start putting up dollars to now, you know, make those things happen. So I think it does start a discussion in which we might not have been having inside a certain level of stagnant normalcy of thinking that we normally have.
Well, thank you very much. We're getting close to the end of the time that we had allotted for the program tonight. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Dr. Novus, well, first of all, I'm going to ask the person from the 408 area code if he'd like to make a quick closing comment, and then after that, I'm going to ask Dr. Novus for any final comments that he would like to make, and then we're going to have Mr. Pianchi, our co-host, to actually close out the show. So our guest from the 408 area code, would you like to add something to what you said earlier or comment on what was just said?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there. It's just whatever it goes, it goes. But for me, when I'm looking back at history, you know, we're looking back at history, you know, we don't want anything, any distractions when we're looking back, you know what I mean? We want to enjoy going back. And I found that through food, through my interest in food, like okra and rice, I got to trace it all the way back to people that were using this food that was coming from the ground to sustain people's lives. And I was just looking at how it all ties in, you know, just like going on a journey, you know, learning about how food, how it came about today and where the history goes. And that's how I got to learn about some history. And it's just, to me, it's just, you get to listen to all kinds of people tell you about what they think about this and that, you know, but when you really take a look at the food and you enjoy the food and what it means, these foods back then are becoming up high dollar plates today. Don't be fooled.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us tonight, and hopefully you'll join us in the weeks to come. And so we're about ready to close out, but we definitely want to hear any closing comments that Dr. Nobles would like to offer. So, Dr. Nobles, please go ahead if you would like to make some final comments.
Thanks, Brother Kevin. I don't have any closing comments. Again, I'm always open to the other discussions in here and the great points that are made by everybody else.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It's so great to have you on every time that we have discussion. Your comments are so informative and enlightening. We appreciate you tonight, as well as our other guests from the 408 area code, and certainly our co-host who now will give us the closing commentary. So, Ms. Piyaki, please go ahead with the closing.
Well, I'm going to say this. Those were American soldiers that done what soldiers done during that time period in history. They fought in American wars. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, they fought in the Mexican-American War. Lee done an outstanding job at Veracruz. Veracruz was the first amphibian landing ever performed by a United States Army under the leadership of General Scott. And I can't think of his first name, usually, as I am.
Winfield Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. He was tremendous. He performed gallantly. He went on to help establish the military academy, which I think evolved into West Point today. Lincoln wanted him to lead the Union forces. And he ethically said he would not fight against his state, Virginia. That was a good thing, because we know we see leaders today. Now, you talk about the Germans. People can say what they want to about Hitler, but Hitler put together a military force that was nothing to be ashamed of. At the battles of Veracruz, the invasion of Normandy at Omaha Beach, the United States Army, you know, they faced some tough challenges. The Third Reich was 15 miles. You know, Germany and Russia had made a pact, but Germany went against that pact with Stalin. And if it hadn't been for the United States joining in, France, Britain, and Germany was probably still fighting at a stalemate today. But Germany got within 15 miles of Moscow, Mr. Washington. 15 miles. And what would history be like today if they had succeeded? I agree with you on Rommel there in North Africa. Rommel was a tremendous leader. But one of my favorite leaders is George S. Patton. And George S. Patton had to put Rommel down in North Africa. And, of course, George S. Patton wanted to go on and go to Moscow, too. And if he had her, maybe we wouldn't have to spend the billions that we spent in a Cold War with Russia. Who knows? He also wanted to go to the Pacific Theater, where the United States fought valiantly, our troops, our leaders, our soldiers, our Navy fought valiantly there also. I often say that this country must have the blessing of somebody up high if you look at those battles. So, no, I like history. My strong history point is going back in ancient time. But I'm starting to find things in modern times of the United States, like the Revolutionary War, when Haitians came and fought with George Washington under the leadership of Henry Christophe. I forget how many. It must have been about 700 Haitian troops, along with the French and also along with the Iroquois Indians. Blacks fought on the Confederate side. Jews fought on the Confederate side. Mexicans fought on the Confederate side. Indians fought on the Confederate side, especially the Creek. Why? Because it was their interest. And when the Confederate lost, thus came those treaties that had things to go on the way they end up going on. We can't get into all that stuff, but it's very, very interesting history. So anyway, to make things short, I appreciate everybody that came on. I appreciate the mention about the young lady that won the spelling bee. What needs to be known is about the work that she puts in order to achieve that. She says she studies 7 hours a day and study over 13,000 words a day to achieve what she achieved. And I think that's deserving of taking our hat off to that young lady. She worked awful, awful hard. Wouldn't it be nice if that was the norm rather than the exception? Thank you very much, Mr. Washington, and everybody else. Have a pleasant and safe week.
Okay, thank you very much, our co-host, Ms. Bianchi. Thank you, Dr. Nova. Thank you to everyone that's listening. I guess I've already left, but I do want to thank everyone who has been listening via the Internet, and we hope that you'll join us again on next Saturday at 8 o'clock p.m. God bless you. Be safe and enjoy the rest of the weekend. Thank you very much.